As always, you can reach me through my website, which is thecountrywriter.com. Very honored to have the guest we have this week, Cowboy Kent Rollins. Are you in Hollis, Oklahoma today?
Yes, sir, John. We are in the southwest corner of Oklahoma. It is in a drought up here, pretty severe. I wish them folks in California would share some of that rainwater over this way.
We may need to send some of ours. It's still raining here and been raining for a while here in East Texas. We're halfway between Dallas and Shreveport. Give you some idea where we are. My wife is actually from Ponca City. So we
been in that country a lot.
Let's get right to it. Let's talk about where you grew up and at what point did you wake up or did you just have an epiphany and say, I think I'm going to be a chuck wagon cook. I'm going to be a cowboy cook. How did that get started?
Well, you know, I was born and raised in southwest Oklahoma at Hollis. We lived down along the Red River for a long time. And it was always around a mother that was a great cook. And I used to admire the old women. Sundays after church, they'd get in the kitchen and go to cooking, and they never had a recipe. And, you know, I'm 8, 9 years old, and I'm thinking, I don't know how they even know what's going on. But it was always some of the best food I ever eaten in my life. And my mother had always told me, she said, cook what you love for the ones you love, and you'll always be okay. And so she let me go to cooking about when I was about 9, I reckon. I made my first chocolate cake. And I really liked the fact that you could bake something, you know. It wasn't just about frying, and sort of come natural to me. And we grew up ranch and farm both. We worked a lot of cattle, a lot of horseback. There was a lot of people that brought meals maybe to a set of pens where we was at sometime. But there was a few chuck wagons involved too that may not have been the best cooking that I've ever seen in my life, but it was always proper cowboy etiquette. You never told the cook it wasn't good. Because the cook could get even pretty quick if he wanted to. I went to guiding elk hunters in 1982 in the Gila Wilderness in southwest New Mexico. And with my uncle, he told me, he said, I know you're a cook because your mother always raised good cooks. He said, so you can cook when we get there. And we was going 21 miles in. I'd never baked in a Dutch oven at altitude. You know, it was our base camp was like 8,200 foot. So the first morning, them hunters was asking me, is this flatbread or are these biscuits or are these pancakes? I said, you can call them whatever you want to today, but tomorrow maybe they'll get better. You know, and it took me a little bit, John, to figure out that you're going to have to mix some baking soda with baking powder, you know, to get something to really bloom and rise when you're at elevation. And when you're in there 4 or 5 weeks, nobody ever taught me. It was just trial and error. They couldn't go nowhere else to eat most of the time because it's too far. So I knew I had a captive audience. And when I got out of there about the fourth season, I allowed that I was going to get a chuck wagon, go back to cooking for some of the ranches that I'd been on. It wasn't long before things got busy. You know, word of mouth travels really quick in the cowboy circle. And cowboys respected me because I knew what the branding fire was and I knew what the cooking fire was. So we started cooking and it's been busy ever since.
So let's talk about chuck wagons. You said you got your first chuck wagon. It's not like you run down to Tractor Supply and say, I'll take that one.
Yeah.
What year was yours made and where did you find it?
Well, I found mine in Spur, Texas. It's an 1876 Studebaker. And Studebaker was really the Cadillacs of wagons. You know, they were the only wagon company that really went ahead and transitioned over into automobiles because Studebaker made pickups and they made cars. You know, a lot of the other wagons transferred over into agricultural equipment, you know, like John Deere, McCormick, stuff like that. But it's like you say, you're not going to go down to Jiffy Lube or any hardware store or anything, find one. But when I started, there was a few more out there than there is now, you know, because I've rode across a lot of pastures and you see an old wagon maybe where it was just left somewhere and it just rotted away, you know. And any wagon could become a chuck wagon because you just took the grain boards out in the back and slipped in a chuck box and you had a chuck wagon.
I have seen, they're called teardrop trailers, the little bitty, I think they were post-World War travel trailers, tiny, tiny travel trailers. And I saw the same thing happen with them over the years. There was one near where I grew up, which, by the way, I grew up near the Red River as well, up near Texarkana. And there was a teardrop trailer behind a man's house, and my family stopped for like 20 years trying to buy this thing from the guy, and he wouldn't sell it, but he did let it rot to nothing.
Yeah.
And so it breaks my heart to hear similar things happen to chuck wagons. But I ran across plans on the internet after that thing came around where you could build teardrop trailers. I'm assuming you could build your own chuck wagon. Talk about that.
Yeah, you could build your own. You know, there's plans out there to start. You're going to have a little more trouble sourcing, you know, axles and wheels. You can't go to Big O Tire and find them. So, but there is some wagon makers. There is some good people that are wheelwrights, you know, if you wanted to go that route. A lot of people will just buy maybe like a buckboard wagon or just a grain wagon, I mean, and then they'll go ahead and complete the chuck box. They'll build it to suit their needs and slip it in the back. We redid our wagon last year, and it was needing that long before it did. And it's a lengthy process when you start it from the ground up and go again, but it was a labor of love.
Cowboy Kent Rollins is our guest on the podcast this week, and we are talking about his career and how he got a career being a chuck wagon cook. I do want to mention my grandfather and great-grandfathers both were blacksmiths. And so when you talk about wagon rings, we have, you know, the gypsy pots people used to wash their clothes in became flower pots. And the top part of my forge that my grandfather built is a wagon wheel ring. The stand that holds up the gypsy pot that, you know, used to hold flowers, also a wagon wheel. So you see what happened to a lot of the parts. Are blacksmiths available to help navigate maybe the wheels and some of the axles if you have to fabricate that if you want to build a chuck wagon?
Yeah, there's a few left scattered across the country. You know, people that are actually wheelwrights, but also are good blacksmith too. You don't find a whole lot of them, but they're out there. It's nearly as easy to source it out like that to where you think, oh, I'm going to get a forge. I'm going to do all this with scratch. It takes a lot to make a wagon wheel. Time you've got the dogs, the fellows, and the spokes and everything. And then you got to shrink it. And then you got to heat it. And then you got to put the rim on it and heat it again. So, you know, when you think back to 1870s during the cattle drive days, and even way before that, wagons were popular. But those people were so gifted with the limit of tools that they had.
They absolutely were, and I'm fortunate to have some of my grandfather's tools that he used. And, you know, when somebody says, you know, hammer out a living, that's where that came from. They literally hammered out a living. Yeah. Cast iron. So you've made some recommendations for cast iron, and some of which I took you up on and purchased. But it seemed forever, my grandfather used to say in the late 60s, he'd say, they don't make any good cast iron anymore. It's all junk now. And it seems there's been somewhat of a resurgence in young people being interested in making better cast iron. I have a field skillet that I like a lot, and I believe you're the one that recommended that one, and I purchased that on your recommendation. What are some others that are out now, or do you prefer using the old cast iron when you cook?
Well, you know, if my go-to piece in the house, if I'm going to cook breakfast for Shan or me every morning, is a Wagner or a Griswold, you know, and when people hear those names, then you need to tell them they're not in business anymore. You still can find some, you know, at antique shops, state sales, something like that. Always tell people be really careful. Some of them are really overpriced. They're probably the best iron that was ever made. And that goes along too with Birmingham Stove and Iron. They made a lot of really good cast iron pieces. And you know, then the thing that people see most readily is Lodge. You know, it's in every store, everywhere. And all my Dutch ovens from back in the 80s are Lodge, before Lodge started pre-seasoning and everything else. But there's a lot of new companies that have come out, you know, in the really, I'd say the last 3 years, and not only Field, but Stargazer, Butterpat, Smithy, Finex. Then there's Marquette, and there's new people trying to start up. They're seeing, like you said, a resurgence of people wanting to cook in something that you didn't throw that pan away every year and buy something else, you know. But also, John, it's the healthiest thing that you can eat out of. You know, cast iron, it'll serve you as a lifetime purchase. You can hand it down from generation to generation. It'll always take care of you.
Non-stick is not necessarily good for you. The things that,
that is
chip
true.
Off of that. So,
yeah.
Point well taken. How busy are you now? Entertainers, which I consider you not only an expert cook, but I consider you an entertainer. I discovered you on your YouTube channel, and I'm sure that has parlayed you into speaking engagements and book appearances, which I see all over your website. What is your website so that we can see what all you're doing, and how busy are you every year?
The website is just kentrollins.com. It'll get you there, and you can click on the events tab, and it'll show you with the new book coming out. The book tour is fixed to be upon us, so people can check that out. But we concentrate a lot on YouTube now, because there's a platform there that you can reach millions of people. And people that have watched our YouTube channel know that it's not just about food. It's about life. It's about being happy. It's about being simple. And that's what we try to get across because, like you, John, we have the greatest fans in the world. And they're always out there. They're supportive. And so we don't cater as much as we used to. Used to, I was either on a ranch for 4 weeks and then cater 2 or 3 weeks, then back on a ranch, and it was solid. I think the most we ever worked in 1 year was like 280-something days cooking. So that's a lot of fires to build. Right now, it's mostly just YouTube, and then we're fixing to launch this new book. So it's took up a lot of our time this spring, but we're excited for it.
I have one of your books. Tell us about your new one. What's it called, and why'd you write it?
Comfort Food, the Cowboy Way. You know, I was raised in them little small towns, and we called them greasy spoon cafes, you know, or you could go in there every day and eat some of the best food you ever had in your life. I can remember thinking if we got to go eat supper at one of them old cafes, it was like the highlight of our day. You know, you didn't come to town and do stuff like that. So we wanted to take all them old classics, because a classic to me is something that's been handed down, but it's been tested through time and will always survive, you know, and it's something that we need to keep alive. So we're going to put a cowboy twist on it here and there. There's a lot of comfort food in there, because being comfortable is the best thing in the world. Whether you're eating, whether you're in a room with 1,000 people, or whether you're in the middle of 300,000 acres on a ranch, it's all about being comfortable. There's a lot of grilling in this cookbook. There's a lot of authentic Mexican food cooking there as well. We wrote the whole book, me and Shan took all the food pictures and all the scenery pictures, so we're very proud of it.
What's your favorite thing to cook?
My favorite thing to cook is an Alsop's burrito, John. That way I don't have to cook it, you know what I mean? You just go by there and pick it up. But no, I really love to cook a good steak, you know, maybe like a good 6 or 8 ounce certified Angus beef filet. And then I love sparkling potatoes. We did that recipe a long time ago in a cookbook, whether it's got Mountain Dew or 7-Up in it, Sprite. But when you finish that off with bread pudding and a whiskey cream sauce or something like that, it's a pretty good day.
I will tell you, not immediately, but almost immediately, tried your sparkling potatoes recipe after you shared the story on your channel with how you came up. Share that story, if you would, of how you came up with the recipe.
This was a long time ago, probably 94, 95. I was on a ranch in the Paladura Canyon. They called it fall works. I called it winter because we were in there past the 21st of December. And it come one of them good blizzards out there, as it will, in that old canyon at times. I'll always make a menu and a grocery list and try to take in, you know, 3 to 4 days extra, because Mother Nature's always going to win out every time. So this snowstorm caught us, and the 3 days in was running short because we looked like we was going to be 5 or 6 days in. So I got to looking around there, and it had been really cold, 5 and 10 below zero, and you could keep potatoes in an ice chest, you know, and they won't freeze, because a potato freeze turn black, it ain't much worth eating. So I did have some potatoes, didn't have much bacon. So I'm thinking, I really don't know what we're going to do here. I've got a little meat left that I can cook for supper tonight, because we're supposed to go home tomorrow. So if I can just make it through tonight, I can fix breakfast in the morning. So I'm thinking, I ain't got enough grease to fry them potatoes, and I really don't want a baked potato. We've been having a lot of them. So under the table over, there's one of them cowboys. He would like to have him an adult cocktail every night. So we had him some Sprite soda pop over there. And I thought, well, he won't miss it. I'll just get me a little. I think I'd put that with them potatoes and some bacon, some onions, some jalapenos and garlic, and you do something. But I knew you couldn't fry it, so it was going to have to bake. I can remember making them that day, and one of them cowboys told me, they said, we can stay another week if we'll have these every day. And I said, we have no potatoes left. This is it.
The necessity is the mother of invention.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, and cowboys were always the greatest people for me to experiment on, because you could always tell if the plate was clean and they got 3 more helpings, this was a recipe that was a keeper. And I don't know of any time that they've ever told me, hey, you know, I don't think we ought to have that no more, because a cowboy, first of all, ain't going to tell the cook there, but you never seen none of them go out there behind a cedar tree and rake the plate out. So that was always a telltale sign.
Who were your mentors?
Who were my mentors? Well, my mother growing up, and now Shannon, you know, she always lets me know that it is very important what we do, and we get to reach people, and we can make people feel so much better. We get so many cards, letters, emails from servicemen and women that are still active duty that'll say, what we did today may not have been pleasant, but they were six or seven of us gathered around a laptop and watched you cook, and you made us feel like we were home. Don't quit, you know. So people that's going through chemo, they watch our videos. Little kids that are 4 and 5 years old, they send us pictures all the time. You know, this is what they want to watch at night before they go to bed. And I look at it one way and that way, John. If I watched it, it'd make me sleepy too, you know. So that's the way it might be. But now, me and Shan work together 365 days a year, and we have a good time every day.
Anyone who does the type of work that you do knows the amount of work that goes into this. You're out in front of the camera, Shannon's behind the camera, and I worked with her to schedule this podcast with you. Talk about how important she is to what you do.
If it wasn't for her, we wouldn't have it, John. She's the love of my life. I always tell her she's my rock. And when she come to this part of the country down here in Southwest Oklahoma, she had never been around this much wind consistently every day, you know. And this has been it's been worse the last couple of years. But I'd tell her, I'd say, you better put a rock in your pocket, because she ain't very big. And she'd say, why would I want to put a rock in my pocket? And I'd say, you ain't going to blow away that away, sugar. That's what I'm trying to say. But nobody taught her how to edit, you know. Nobody said, hey, this is how you're going to film these videos. We started out a long time ago with videos, shooting them on one of them little handy cam camcorders, you know, and we've bought several different kind of really high dollar cameras, but it always goes back to the iPhone, you know, and that's what we always film on. But she's a trooper. Not only can she film, she's a great baker in a Dutch oven. She's been on ranches with me cooking, and she knows there's no spa days, no days off. The woman's tough. She is.
KentRollins.com is the website. You can find his new book,
Comfort Food, The Cowboy Way.
And it will be available when? Is it available now?
March 28th. You can pre-order from us now. We'll make sure you get a signed copy and get it out to you.
What made you decide to start a YouTube channel? I've interviewed a number of people who are like you. They're a YouTube star, which is, for us who are older, is a pretty interesting phenomenon. You know, we predate the internet itself. So
yeah,
when YouTube came out, it was silly things, and now it's serious things. How did you start a YouTube channel and why?
Well, probably 8-9 years ago, we did a little video, and Shan loaded it up, and we didn't even look at analytics or graphics or none of this stuff. It was just out there, you know. We didn't know where it went. Then it'd be about maybe 7-8 months. We might make another one. Then we got to realizing that if you can be consistent, you know, and turn out something that's quality that people really want to enjoy, this might be a great way to reach people. You know, so I can remember we was cooking at a festival in Branson, and we got an email from Google and says, you will be receiving your plaque for 100,000 subscribers. And I told Shan, I said, when did we get 100,000 subscribers? I didn't even know, you know, but we got to paying a lot of attention. I look at YouTube every morning, look at the analytics, you know, go through there. It is the greatest platform to reach people. You know, we have a lot of folks that call us, and they'll say, hey, I've got the perfect show for you. And I say, no, y'all want to do reality. We want to do real. We have the perfect show. It's 2:30 every Wednesday Central Time on YouTube.
I spent a lot of years in the broadcasting business, and the last thing you need is somebody telling you how to do what you already know how to do.
Yeah. You know, YouTube too, we get to be in control of our content. You know, we get to put out what we want, when we want to. We get to say, God bless America. We get to say, y'all need to pray for so-and-so. That's a big thing for us.
What is an easy video to produce, and what is a difficult video to produce?
Well, easy is maybe the wind ain't blowing over 10 miles an hour and blowing everything away while you're trying to work. A hard video is usually something that's, you know, got a longer cook time, especially if you're at the wagon or something like that, and the wind's blowing anywhere from 30 to 50. You know, we've got good mics. We use Rode mics. They cut out a lot of that wind, but it just beats you down, you know. And right now, we're not being able to cook out there where the wagon is because of burn ban and because of such dry conditions. There's so much dry grass up there. One spark burn off 5,000 acres in a heartbeat.
Talk about Bertha. Where'd you get her? How heavy is she? I know you say she's over 400 pounds.
For people that don't know who Bertha is, She's not kinfolk. She is my stove. Years ago, when I first started cooking, I dug a hole in the ground like all old wagon cooks and laid a fire grate over it. Got so tired of bending over, so tired of the wind blowing everything in my gravy. And I'm thinking, you know, I know a feller that's got one of these stoves, and I'm going to see if he'll make me one. So we got one probably, I don't know, it was 93 or 4 or something like that. And at that time, the original Bertha like that didn't have a floor in it, you know, so it weighed 347 pounds with the top out. All of it come apart on the top because it would have three plates in there that would fit a Dutch oven or a skillet smoke tight. And I could pull it back on one end, stand it up, back the trailer up there close enough to where I could just lean it over and then push it up on there. And people said, when are you going to quit cooking? I'll say, when I can't load it no more, you know, so it wasn't, I guess, maybe a year and a half ago, 2 years at the most, Hasty Bake Grill Company out of Tulsa had seen this old wood stove that I used, and they wanted to pair up with us and make a new Bertha. And I told them, I said, you be careful there now. I said, it weighs enough. Don't go to adding too much to it. But the greatest thing they did to it, John, was they did put a bottom in it, but they put wheels on it. It will roll good on flat and hard surfaces. I've rolled it through the grass, across parking lots, you know, and I can load it, just put a set of ramps down and push it up on the trailer, and it's not heavy at all. They're great cooking machines, they are.
What is the most interesting dish that you've ever cooked?
Most interesting dish I've ever cooked.
And I'll tell you where this comes from. I've heard you say Shannon introduced you to things you never ate. Was there something she introduced you to that was not only a first time for you to eat, but she convinced you, or you decided to cook it yourself? What was it?
Well, sushi would probably be the number one thing. You know, she asked me one time, she said, you ever eat sushi? And I said, yeah, at a truck stop in Reno a long time ago. And she said, you don't get sushi from a truck stop. And I said, I figured that out about 2 o'clock in the morning that night, you know, when I was driving down the road. But she told me, she said, I'm going to take you where there's good sushi, you know. And then when our first cookbook come out, we made a sushi, but it was a beef sushi. Got a Milanese cut of beef on it, you know. But it wasn't too long ago, I told her, I said, I'm going to show people that I can make real sushi without all this equipment they have, the rollers and the little pad and everything like that. So we did a video on sushi, and it was good. You know, every once in a while, I like to get out of my comfort zone and a little bit on cooking every once in a while. So she told me one time, she said, you should make some pot stickers. And I didn't know what a pot sticker was, but we did do them, and they're pretty good eating themselves too.
I've seen you on, in the business, it's called cross promotion, where you've gone on to another person's YouTube channel.
Yeah.
And you've basically interviewed each other. Townsend is an example. Who are some of the other folks that you've crossed paths with that you've either been on their channel, they've been on yours, and you've found them to be really interesting?
Arizona Ghostwriter, I say, is probably one of the best. That feller has so much history. Talks about the Old West, the wagons, the gold mines, everything in the world that you want to cover that happened in the Old West. His channel has got you covered. And we did a deal with him to where really it was sort of like historical foods, you know, and we did Panda Campo, some hardtack, you know, SOS, stuff like that that's sort of been handed down from a long time ago. But I always enjoy them deals because really when you get to doing one of them, I can sit here like talking to you, John. I'm not having to cook or stand by a fire. I'm just getting to visit with somebody.
What would you like to see as the future of the type of cooking that you do? You know, I started Dutch oven cooking with the Scouts when I was young, and I'm still a fan. I had collected several different, both vintage and more modern pieces of cast iron that I cook on. I have a wood stove like yours in my shop that we have one in the house. And it's more for practical reasons, but are we seeing the young people adopt this? Is there interest there?
I think so in a way, you know, when COVID brought some of that to mind when it took off, people was thinking, you know, we need to be a little more self-sustaining to get all this to go with. Not only are folks, more people buying cast iron, there's more people trying to get back out into what we call the neck of the woods that's ain't got many people in them, seeing what's happening and go camping. When you can bring that together and you can get a family around a fire and you can cook something in a Dutch oven or you can grill something, well, that's what it's about. That's what everybody needs to create is find out life is simple. People complicate it. And there's no need in complicating it with food.
I know that you have products that you sell on your website, KentRollins.com. What if you were advising somebody to put together just a nuts and bolts basic package of, you know, what they would need to go outside and start cooking? What would you suggest they buy?
Well, if it's just, you know, maybe two people, I'd get a 10 or a 12-inch good skillet, then probably a 10 or a 12-inch shallow Dutch oven, because you can cook enough for two, three people, even four, you know, in one of them. But also either a good grill combination or a good smoker. You know, there's so much stuff that you can cook on an open fire, but there's so much you can do with it when you can know how to manage the heat to where you're cooking on indirect heat or direct heat. So, you know, if you got a smoker and a grill, maybe they're the same thing. You got you some pieces of cast iron and you got a chair and a fork and a knife, you're fixed up.
You mentioned that the company made you a new cast iron stove. Is this something that they sell with your name on it that we can buy?
Yeah, it's not cast iron. It's Courtesan 10, I think is what they call it. It'll get a patina on it. It'll rust, but it won't pit. And that's sort of what we were after, to give it that old good bronze splotchy color, you know, everywhere. And they can just get on our website or go straight to hastybakegrills.com and see it. We also designed a smoker with them that just come out this last, I guess maybe it was just this last fall, late December maybe. It's called the Roughneck Smoker. It's something that we wanted to get out there to where it's really airtight smoker. When you shut it down and latch the lids, it'll really cook. You don't have to use as much wood or hardwood lump. And I think it speeds your cooking time up a little too as well.
There are some opportunities for the public to join you and others either on excursions or get-togethers. Talk about some of those that are coming up.
The book tour, we'll start out, we go to Chicago. We teamed up with Yeti. We're an ambassador for them. So we'll do some of their stores as a book sign in Chicago is the first one. And then we'll go to Kidron, Ohio, at Layman's, at the largest Amish store I've ever been in my life. We'll cook there and do a little demonstration and then a book signing and come home for a couple of days. And then it's Denver, El Segundo, California, and then Houston, Dallas, Austin, somewhere in that order, some in Oklahoma. And then we're back to South Carolina. An event that is one of the favorites of ours that we do every year is in Lebanon, Missouri, Memorial Day weekend. It's called Wagons for Warriors. Usually between 30 and 40 wagons show up. You can get a ticket and eat as much as you want from samples from each and every wagon, and all the proceeds go to around the Fort Leonard Wood area, and then it is distributed, you know, to help with veterans and servicemen and women still struggling with PTSD. Also, John, we have our first ever, for me especially, cowboy cruise coming up next January. You know, I'm with some really good friends of mine, Andy Nelson and Bryn Hill. Andy's been doing these nails for quite some time, so they decided that we ought to do this. And Shen's been on a cruise, and she said, "You'll like it." And I said, "I always liked one of them deals. You know, if it's water and you can skip a rock across it, it ain't too bad." But I said, "I don't know about this." And she said, "No, you'll be fine." But we're going to do actually some cooking demonstrations on the cruise. And that's also listed on our website. People can find out some information about it.
And I'm guessing there is a limit on how many spaces are available.
Yes, I don't know how many people they're taking, but you can sure sign up and get her done today. People want to tune in. We'll be on Fox and Friends this Saturday morning, bright and early. We're going to do a little cooking demonstration up there and promote the new book.
Speaking of television, I've seen you on Throwdown with Bobby Flay. I've seen you on some of the network morning shows. How do you wind up getting booked for those? Obviously, the Throwdown with Bobby Flay was a surprise to you. How did that go down and where was that?
Well, we were on a ranch down by Byers, Texas at the time, and this lady from the Food Network called, and she said, "Hey, I'd like to do a special called Chuck Wagon Cuisine, and your name come up. We'd like to feature you." And I said, "Be fine, ma'am. Just sort of give me." I said, we're shipping cattle down here, so I said, "We're just going to have to fit it in here, there, and yonder." And she gave me the dates, and it worked out just fine. We filmed for 2 days off and on. Went to pick Shannon up at Oklahoma City at the airport that night and come back. She said, "How's filming?" I said, "Something different going on. I don't know what." I said, "They bring in another sound crew. They got more lighting." I said, "So I don't know what's going on." I said, "All I know, we got to be down to Wagon about 7:30 in the morning." So we went down there and they started out just like it's another normal day of filming about 9. Well, it's probably a little later than that. I'd say about 10:30, 11 o'clock. Here come this pickup driving up. And Bobby got out and was walking up there, and Shannon said, "You know that guy?" And I said, "Yeah, I think I know who he is." And by this time, and you know North Texas, in September, it was about 95, humidity was about 90. We come around there and he said, you know, I'd like to challenge you to cook a chicken fried steak. I said, in my kitchen today. And he said, yeah. I said, welcome to the land of hot and heavy. And I told Shannon, I said, we're going to find out how tough this man is. And we took every stick of firewood we had and shoved it in old Bertha. And then I put him on the hot end of the stove. And Bobby nearly melted. He did.
I believe he mentioned something about almost melting.
Yes.
On the show.
Yeah. He said it was too hot. He said nobody would have this job. And I said, job security, Bobby. I'll keep it.
How long do you plan on doing this, Ken?
Till about 30 minutes before the funeral.
Okay.
That's about to work. Because I think I'm going to have to cater my own. So we'll see how that works out.
Yeah. Hey, it's been a pleasure to have you on. Let's talk about your new book, when it's available, how we can buy it.
Comfort Food, The Cowboy Way. You know, our YouTube fans really inspired this book as to what we wanted it to be. Me and Shan worked quite a while on it. It went by quicker than I thought it was. And the next thing you know, they're saying, you know, pub date's March 28th. We've been having pre-orders. We'll go to mailing books out when it's close to that date. And they say I'm behind because I think I've signed about 900 or 1,000. They told me I didn't like, but maybe 1,000 more and I could nearly catch up. But you can get them at off on Amazon. But if you get them from us off our website, they will be signed. I tell people, look on that website. Just click on the events tab. Find out if that book tour is close enough because we'd love to see each and every one of you.
Cowboy Kent Rollins, the guest on the podcast this week. It truly has been an honor and a pleasure to talk with you. Thank you.
Oh, it is my pleasure, my friend.